Our brother Peter Lawrence will now give us those much needed words of exhortation.
Good morning, brethren and sisters. We've come this morning, as we do every Sunday morning, to a remembrance service. It's an opportunity for us to put aside the cares and the distractions of our lives and to reflect on the work, to reflect on the example which Jesus has left for us. The purpose, our goal as disciples is to change. Is to take the word of God into our hearts in order to change us. Now, we are all different, and we've all been called different. But we come together as members of one body, and we all bring different personalities. Now, that's okay. That is who we are. But what we want to consider this morning is the changing of our character, which is absolutely necessary for us to be pleasing to God. What we're going to be looking at this morning is the Apostle Peter. And in particular, one night in his life, the final night of Christ's life. And in that night, he was completely transformed. He was completely transformed from Simon, the son of Jonah, the fisherman, into Peter, the rock, who is the pillar of the early ecclesia. Now, we all know Peter, impetuous Peter, as he's frequently called. We know of his enthusiasm, of his willingness to take part in anything, his confidence. Now, the transformation that occurs in this man is nothing short of amazing. God has specifically left records for us like this for our benefit, to see different characters in the Bible mature and develop in their service to God, so we can take lessons and we can take guidance from those who have gone before. So let's turn then to John chapter 13. And we'll try and follow this narrative through of the last night of Christ's life. Now, I'm hoping we can all use our imaginations and really try and put ourselves in Peter's position, in the position of the other disciples, to try and get the full impact of what happened on that last night and what it would have been like to actually have been there and experience the things that Peter did. So if we turn to John chapter 13 and come in at verse 31, the disciples and Jesus are in the upper room and Judas has left. And you can almost sense a certain relief in Jesus. Maybe you can sense his shoulders relax as Judas leaves. And in verse 31, therefore when he was gone out, when Judas had gone out, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself, and shall straightway glorify him. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. And that's such a tender expression from Jesus, as he has his 11 remaining faithful disciples there, and he calls them his little children. And it's a reference to the fact that they are still children, they are still undeveloped, they are still immature. And Jesus, knowing them, he knew who he had chosen, he knew his disciples, and he knew that they still had so much further to go and so much further to develop in their characters. So he says to them, little children, yet a little while I am with you. You shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, whither I go, ye cannot come. So now I say unto you, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. Now, if we stop there, that is not a new commandment at all, is it? Of course, in the Old Testament, they were exhorted, love your neighbor as yourself. They were exhorted to love one another. So that part is not new at all. But when he continues, as I have loved you, that, of course, is the new commandment. And now, the way Jesus loved his disciples, it was new. That had never happened before, that a man had come and sacrificed himself and gave up his life for his friends. For those who were following him. So he gives them this new commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye so also love one another. And that's an interesting thing for us to consider, just as an aside, as we continue in verse 35, because he says, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." And how can all men know? Of course, we have to show this love. This love has to be evident. It can't just be in the confines of our own home to our spouse or to our children or to our parents. This is something that we have to extend. It has to be amply evident to people who we come in contact with, people who we work with, to people. Would someone that you work with be able to say, "I know that this person is certainly a disciple of Jesus because they show love one to another"? How about, you know, our friends, the people, our brothers and sisters, visitors that come in? Are we so warm and loving to them that it's amply evident that we are disciples of Christ? So Jesus gives them this exhortation then to love one another as he has loved them. Now we come down to verse 36. "And Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? Jesus answered him, Whither I go, ye cannot follow me now, but ye shall follow me afterwards." And this is an interesting statement by Jesus. Peter wants to go with Jesus. And the way that Jesus said he was going was through this sacrifice. And Peter thinks he's ready. He says, "Jesus, where are you going?" Jesus says, "Where I'm going, you cannot follow me now. You are not ready. You are not ready to display the sacrificial love that I'm about to display. But you shall follow me afterwards." So Jesus is talking to Peter about his maturity, about his development, about his character. That he was not ready at that point. He was still immature. But there would come a time, Peter, there will come a time, Peter, when you will be ready. You will have matured. And afterwards, you will be able to follow in this way. But Peter is stubborn, as we know. Verse 37, "Peter said unto him, Lord, why can I not follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake." And what a bold statement that is by Peter. His confidence that he says, "I'm ready. I am ready to display this sacrificial love that you've just told me about. I'm ready. I will lay down my life for you." Jesus turns to him in front of all the disciples and he says, "Will you lay down your life for my sake?" What a challenge that would have been to Peter when Jesus turned right to him and he said, "Will you? Will you lay down your life for my sake?" I'm sure there was, of course, no sarcasm in Jesus' voice, but there was certainly a challenge issued to Peter at that time. "Will you lay down your life for my sake? Verily, verily, I say unto you, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice." So the challenge is on the table for Peter. Peter thinks he's strong. He thinks he's ready to perform the sacrifice. And Jesus says, "You know, hold on, you're not ready." And he gives him the warning and he says, "You're not as strong as you think, Peter." So as we continue in the upper room over in Luke chapter 22, we'll see some more as the story continues. So they're in the upper room, yeah, also in Luke chapter 22, and we come in at verse 24, and there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And as we consider Peter and as we look at his character, I think we can be sure that it was him who'd started this strife. Peter was so confident in his ability. He was so confident in his loyalty, in what he thought was his loyalty to Jesus. He figured he was certainly the most loyal disciple. He knew he had his faults, as we all do, but Peter thought for sure he was Jesus' his best disciple. So Jesus continues to rebuke them. He says, "Of course, you shall not be as the kings of the Gentiles who do this kind of thing." And then he comes down into verse 31, and the Lord said, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I've prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." And this again is another very, very interesting statement when we break it down, that what Jesus says to Peter. First of all, he doesn't call him Peter. He calls him Simon. He calls him Simon the fisherman of 3.5 years ago when Jesus first called him, the raw fisherman. "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat." And the Satan here is the Jewish leaders who desired, they wanted all the disciples. They were so bitter and so envious at Jesus and this group, and they wanted to destroy it. They wanted to completely stamp it out. And they had Judas already And without a shadow of a doubt, they would have sought to slowly break up the fidelity of that group and slowly pick away if they could do one disciple by one disciple to break up this group and disperse them. It's interesting. Jesus says, they want you, disciples. The word you in verse 31 is a collective, is a group. They want you, disciples, to sift you as wheat. But in verse 32, I have prayed for thee, Peter, singular. I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. And when you are converted, Peter, strengthen your brethren. And again, there's this challenge issued to Peter. He thinks he's fine. He's got no problem. He's so loyal to Jesus. But in fact, what Peter thought was his greatest strength, what he thought was his best character aspect, his loyalty to Christ, was actually his biggest weakness. And Jesus knew that, which is why Jesus so specifically prayed for Peter. Because Peter was in a position that if he fell, if the Jews got him, surely the rest of the disciples would have gone with him as he was their sort of their leader, their spokesman to a degree. So it's so vital for Peter to remain strong, and that's why Jesus prayed specifically for Peter that his faith would not fail. And when he was converted, well, how would that have stung Peter? He thought he was the most loyal disciple, and Jesus says, you're not even converted yet, Peter. When you are converted, strengthen your brethren. Verse 33, and he said unto him, Lord, I am ready. I am ready to go with thee both into prison and to death. It's still big, big words from Peter. Jesus says again, and this is the second time that Jesus says this, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before that thou shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me. It's the second time that Jesus gave that warning to Peter. So let's turn over to Matthew chapter 26 and continue. It's interesting how we can see this discussion or this exchange between Jesus and Peter. And Jesus, of course, in his amazing wisdom, knows what will happen. He knows the events. He knows exactly what's going to happen. He knows how Peter's going to react. And Jesus is giving Peter every chance that he possibly can. In his wisdom, in his compassion for Peter, knowing what will happen, he's trying to give him every bit of help he possibly can. And Peter's, he's missing it. He doesn't seem to get it, of course. And his stubbornness and all these challenges that Jesus is giving him seem to only enrage his temper almost. So when we come over to Matthew chapter 26 and come in at verse 30, they've left the peace and the security of the upper room. And in verse 30, when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Then said Jesus unto them all, all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. So it's night, and they're out in the garden, and Jesus says, all of you will be offended. He doesn't say, you three will be offended, you will be okay. He says, all of you will be offended. And again, Peter's still burning, still, I guess, annoyed or aggravated at what Jesus had said, how Jesus had challenged his faith and his loyalty. He's still trying to prove himself. In verse 33, Peter answered and said unto him, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. And this is the third time Jesus says unto him, verily I say unto thee that this night before the cock crow thou shalt deny me thrice. So the other thing that Peter says, which is interesting, is he challenges all the other disciples too, right in the face of Jesus. He says, though all men, even though all the rest of these guys here are offended, I won't be. I wonder what that would have done for the rest of the disciples standing there. And Peter says, even if the rest of you guys are offended, I still won't be. You can see his pride and his arrogance coming through. And he continues, Peter says in verse 35, though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. And likewise also said the other disciples. Now in Mark, we won't turn there, but in Mark chapter 14, it says that Peter spake more vehemently. He was getting pretty worked up about this. And he was insisting to Jesus that he would die with Jesus before he would deny him. Imagine what Jesus would have thought when Peter keeps on being so stubborn and Jesus is trying to warn him and trying to warn him, and he will have none of it. Back to John chapter 18. John chapter 18 and verse 10. They're in the garden. Judas has come with a band of soldiers, and they're about to take Jesus. And Peter is still, he's still fuming. And in verse 10, when the mob comes, Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. And so we can see clearly the motivation for Peter to do this. As we follow the story through, and we see Peter would have been doing everything to prove himself to Jesus. We've looked at how many times Jesus had said, "You're not ready, Peter. You're not ready. You need more development." And Peter's saying, "I am ready. I am ready. I am ready." And his loyalty being challenged. So when it comes, push comes to shove, Peter surely would have said, "Oh yeah, watch this, Jesus. I'm ready. Watch this, and I'm going to pull out a sword to prove it, to prove my loyalty to you." Jesus says in verse 11, "Put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" And Peter just didn't understand, unfortunately, and Jesus kept giving him chances. Verse 15, after they'd all forsaken and fled. It's interesting also, perhaps Peter dictated Mark's gospel, and in Mark's gospel it says very specifically that all forsook and fled. It's interesting, of course, that would have been written afterwards, and you see the change in Peter when he admitted himself that they all forsook him and fled. So verse 15, at least he had some courage to follow. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known to the high priest and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, "Art not thou also one of this man's disciples?" He saith, "I am not." And so the challenge begins. There were two men on trial that night. There was Jesus before the authorities, and there was Peter before his God. And now is when he has a chance, really, to prove his loyalty. And it's interesting, if we look at the challenge or the trial that he's about to undergo, he's at his weakest. He's been challenged by Jesus over and over for a number of things, for having a sword in the garden, for falling asleep in the garden, for not being ready, for being still immature and still needing development. And he's confused and he's tired. It's the middle of the night. And isn't that true with us, that at our weakest moment is perhaps when we have our greatest challenges? We see Peter coming into the greatest temptation, the greatest challenge of his life, and he's perhaps least ready to deal with it. So he's into the palace of the high priest, and it would have been a very formidable environment with a bloodthirsty mob trying to kill Jesus. Everything about the trial was illegal. It was at night, and they were out for blood, and that was it, the end of the story. And so Peter would have taken a lot of courage even to be there, even to be in the midst of this environment. So he comes in, and right away at the door he denies Jesus, verse 17. Verse 18, "And the servants and the officers stood there who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself." And he made a big mistake here, because a fire of coals not only gives off heat, but it gives off light. And so Peter stepped out of the safety of the shadows, and he stepped out of the darkness into the glimmering light, the flickering light of the coals, to warm himself. And of course, he's spotted. Let's turn over to Mark chapter 14 and continue the story. Mark chapter 14 and verse 66. So Peter's in the palace. He's in the midst of this hostile environment. And in verse 66 of Mark chapter 14, "And as Peter was beneath in the palace, there cometh one of the maids of the high priest. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, Thou also was with Jesus of Nazareth. But he denied, saying, I know not, neither understand I what thou sayest. And he went out into the porch, and the cock crew." So again, he's in the light, and he's spotted, and he goes out into the porch. "And a maid saw him again, and began to say to them that stood by, This is one of them." And we can imagine When if you walk into a room, a noisy room, and all of a sudden everything goes quiet when you enter, how you get the tingles on the back of your neck as all the attention somehow is drawn to you. And I'm sure that's how Peter would have felt as this word, as the maid whispers and the word travels around the room, that this is one of the men. This is one of the men who was with Jesus. And imagine what that would have been like for Peter, knowing the hostility of the environment, that they were about to kill Jesus, that he was perhaps as good as dead if they found out that he was one of his disciples. And as the tension builds, as he feels a tingle in the back of his neck, and he's got his chance now. This is his chance to put his money where his mouth is. And he denied it again in verse 70. And a little after, they that stood by said again to Peter, "Surely thou art one of them, for thou art a Galilean, and thy speech agreeth thereto." John says that this one who stood by was a kinsman of Malchus, perhaps someone who was in the garden standing beside Malchus when he had his ear cut off. So this is evidence now. Peter is no longer a secret who he is, and he's discovered. And in verse 71, "But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom ye speak." And this is Simon the fisherman now. This is Simon the son of Jonah, the raw, cursing fisherman who comes out of Peter. And the second time the cock crew, in verse 72, "And Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him, Before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. And when he thought thereon, he wept." And we need to turn to Luke chapter 22 to really get the full impact of what is happening here. Peter is outside, and he's in so much pressure. He's in this pressure cooker under so much stress. And he's being tested, and he comes to the point, and he fails. He's had this chance. He's had lots of chances. And by the third one, he's blown it. And the cock crows, and in Luke chapter 22, verse 60, Peter said, "Man, I know not what thou sayest." And immediately while he yet spake, the cock crew. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the words of the Lord, how he had said unto him, "Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." And Peter went out and wept bitterly. What kind of look would that have been? When Peter's standing outside in his greatest trial, and he's failed, and he turns, and Jesus is looking straight at him, right into his eyes. What would that look have said? I don't know that I could have ever returned it. That piercing gaze of Jesus surely would have been compassion. But Jesus said, "Look, I gave you all the chances, Peter. I told you what was going to happen, and you still did it." And when Peter considers this, when he sees that look in right into his eyes, that burning gaze of Jesus right into his eyes, he goes out and he weeps bitterly. And he's a broken man. And at that point, his life turns. At that point, in that exact moment, and under all that emotion and stress and that challenge, and at that moment, when he realizes what Jesus has said, he changes. He's a changed man. We'll look at some evidence of that now, and we'll turn over to John chapter 21, after Jesus has risen. And we know the story. They're out fishing on the lake, and they haven't caught anything. They're out on the boat, and they see Jesus on the shore, John chapter 21. And we see Peter's personality coming through, his personality, which is who he is, which is who we are, our personalities. When he sees Jesus, he jumps out of the boat. He doesn't have anything on. He girds his coat on. He just jumps in the water. And isn't that Peter? That's Peter to a T, his enthusiasm. But what is different about Peter comes out in verse 15. When they had dined, Jesus said unto Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonas," and I'm sure he would have taken Peter aside at this point. He wouldn't have done it in front of all the disciples. He says, "Simon, son of Jonas." Again, he doesn't say, you know, Peter Cephas, the rock. He calls him Simon, the son of Jonah, the raw, immature fisherman. He says, "Simon, lovest thou me more than these?" The Greek for lovest, I'm sure we all know, is agape, this sacrificial love, this new commandment that Jesus gave to them. And Peter answers, he says, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I have an affection for thee." And Jesus said unto him, "Feed my lambs." And what an interesting statement by Peter. What did he say before? "I am ready, Jesus. I will lay down my life for you." What does he say now? He can't say that. He's a changed, he's a broken man. He cannot answer, I will sacrifice myself for you, Jesus. When Jesus asks him, he can't say that because he knows it's not true, and he's changed. You can see the change in him. Jesus says unto him, "Feed my lambs." He said unto him the second time, "Simon, son of Jonah, lovest thou me?" Do you have this sacrificial love for me? Peter said unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I have an affection for you. He said unto him, Feed my sheep. And he said unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, lovest thou me? Do you have an affection for me? And Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I have an affection for thee. Jesus said unto him, Feed my sheep. And what a change in Peter. That would have been so humbling for Peter to be challenged three times. He had three chances to confess, to repent of his three denials. And what a change, man. That would have taken so much humility on Peter's part just to admit, I can't say this. I cannot say that I will lay down my life. I didn't. I had a chance and I didn't. I cannot say this. And you see the change in Peter's character. And it's interesting again what Jesus says. Jesus always said the right thing. Verily, verily, I say unto you, when you were young, you girded yourself and walked whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This he spake, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said unto him, Follow me. He said, You are ready. What Peter could not do when he could not follow in the upper room, Jesus now says to him, Follow me. And think what would have gone through Peter's mind. Of course, that last night of Jesus' life and all the challenges, when he said, I am ready to follow you now, Peter said, and Jesus said, No, you're not. But it would have taken him back 3.5 years to when Jesus would have caught him and talked to him as he was fishing on the lake. And Jesus said, Follow me. So it's such an amazing change in Peter, and it's really evident, and it just brings so much power to the words that he wrote in his letters in 2 Peter chapter 1. When we considered all these things, we considered how Peter started and how he changed, how the effect of that night on Peter. And when we read the words in 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 12 to 16, they have so much more impact and they have so much more power when we consider what happened in Peter's life to bring him to this point, to say these words. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 12. Wherefore, I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things, though ye know them, and be established in the present truth. That established, strengthen your brethren, as Jesus commanded him to do. Verse 13, yea, I think it meet, as long as I am in this tabernacle, to stir you up by putting you in remembrance. The amount of times Peter talks about remembering, he would have never forgotten all the events of that night, especially not the look that Jesus gave him when he looked into Jesus on trial. Knowing that shortly I must put off this, my tabernacle, even as our Lord Jesus Christ hath showed me. Moreover, I will endeavor that ye may be able, after my decease, to have these things always in remembrance. For we have not followed cunningly devised fables when we made known unto you the power and the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, but were eyewitnesses of his majesty. And everything would have come flooding back to Peter, and all the things that Jesus would have said, and the power and the look and the specific words that Jesus chose to use in everything that he said to Peter. It's just amazing the transformation that occurred. So what can we take from this? We are about to share together the body and the blood of the Lord. What can we consider? What can we meditate on? We've all been called as Simon, the son of Jonah, the fisherman. Whether we grew up in a Sunday school or whether we came to the truth later in life, we're all rough and tumble fishermen to start with. But who are we now? Do we still trust in our own strength, as Peter did? Are we caught up with the doctrines and the ways of the world? Do we press our own views onto the ecclesia? Do we stubbornly resist changing our character, as Judas did? Or are we slowly changing? Do we let the word of God in, deep into our hearts, not just on the surface? Are we recognizable as Jesus' disciples by that self-sacrificing love that we show one to another? The bottom line is that we need to change. God can use all our varying personalities, but we must be willing to let him. We are in God's ecclesia, and we need to remember that. We need to let his word change us into vessels which are fit for his honor. Our life in the truth is a constant development. There is pain as the rough edges are slowly filed off, but there's also incredible joys along the way. And we know, of course, that there is no joy which can possibly match the joy which will be felt in God's kingdom. So as we share these memorial emblems, let us truly examine ourselves. Let us resolve to walk more perfectly in God's way.